Hello, everybody. My name is Adrian Clark, and I am an alcoholic.
Hi, Adrian.
It's good to be back here. Thanks for having me back again. I'd like to welcome everybody that was here last week, and also everybody that was watching the Super Bowl last week. I'd like to welcome you, too. Last week, I kind of I just told my story. You know, I'm an alcoholic. I had chronic alcoholism. I've been asked to kind of do a theme of love in the 4 weeks, and when I'm telling my story and doing the first step, I mean, there's no love in it at all. You know, there's the only love in my first step is the love from the people that were surrounding me. You know, my parents and my family, and I had some good people in my life. I talked about it last week. People that kind of try to steer me in the right direction and stuff, and that was the only love that I had in my life. I didn't know how to love. I was incapable of doing it, and I wanted to. I think deep in the heart of everyone, we all want to have a mate. You know, we all want to have someone that we can love and kind of take care of, and you know, and I never knew how to do that, and I had some great partners. You know, one partner that comes to mind was a girl that, you know, was with me through the darkest days of my alcoholism. And the last night that I ever seen her, she dropped me off at my mom's house with my bags, and she was crying. She says, "You know what, I never want to see you in my life again." And I never have seen her again, you know. I was advised to stay away for a minute. So there was no love in my life. And, you know, I think the first step's so important. And there's so much information in this book on the first step, and I skimped on it last week, you know, just telling my story. We could spend the whole 4 weeks on the first step, especially if there's new people here. And not just for new people. I need to hear it again, you know. People with time, we need to revisit this, you know. We need to kind of see if we're still alcoholic. You know, one of the scariest things I hear in meetings from people with time is that, you know, I'm not sure if I'm alcoholic or not. You know, people with 10, 15 years or whatever. And if you're not sure you're alcoholic, and you are alcoholic, you're sure to take the test. So I think it's very important to. I was doing some step work with two new guys yesterday, and one of them is a new guy, and one of them has 16 years, and he's revisiting the steps. And you know, we were talking about the importance of continuously pouring concrete and steel into your first step, you know. So I talked about powerlessness last week, you know, being totally powerless, couldn't shake the drink problem at all, couldn't get rid of it, couldn't shake it off. And, you know, powerless to me is like you're driving a high-powered, high-performance sports car, and it's going towards the edge of a cliff, and the brakes aren't working, and the foot brake's not working, and the doors are locked, and you can't get out. And that's what my drinking looked like towards the end. Totally powerless. Like, I'm not in control at all. No power in my life when I walked in through the doors of Alcoholics Anonymous. So how do you know that you're done with the first step in AA? Well, there's smoke coming out of your heels and you're going for the second step. You know, that's been my experience of it. But the second step is something that went over my head for many years in Alcoholics Anonymous. And quite frankly, like, looking back on it, I don't see how it wouldn't go over anybody's head, because, you know, we don't have deep spiritual insight when we come here, although we probably think we do, you know. Why would we even come here if we had deep spiritual insight, you know? So I was relieved to know that, you know, just getting all this information on the first step, I mean, the allergic reaction, the physical allergy, once I put alcohol in my body. Yeah, you know, it was a relief to hear that. It was like someone opened the gates of hell and kind of said, "Come on out, son," you know. But that piece on its own, without the other two pieces, is kind of useless, you know. So I was relieved to know that there was a mental obsession and a spiritual aspect of this illness that kind of sets the whole drinking pattern or the whole drinking cycle in motion. But then that in itself, I mean, just to kind of find that out and find that there's no way out of this, I mean, that's cruelty, right? So I've been advised to do some big book stuff this week and not just ramble off on my stories, you know, so I'm going to do that, you know. I didn't have my glasses with me last week either, but, you know, so here we are, you know, page 44, second step, we agnostics. You know, we were just doing this at my home group yesterday. My home group is the Saturday morning big book beginners meeting in Manhattan, 20th Street. And we were doing this yesterday, and you know, I got to tell you, like, this is one of my favorite pieces of spiritual literature. There's just so much in here. It's a gold mine. It's an absolute gold mine. And I never get tired of, and I hope I never get sick of kind of doing this work and reading this and kind of, you know, my own experience being reinvigorated when I do this. So it's we agnostics, and, you know, I've had good teachers in this program that took time out to explain these words and stuff to me. An agnostic, it derives from the Latin word agnosis, and it means to no knowledge, lack of knowledge. But not just that, if you look close, it's lack of experiential knowledge. So, you know, that's me. You know, somebody who's skeptical or non-committal. I was afraid not to believe in God. I grew up in a Catholic home in Ireland. I grew up in one of those houses where there was Sacred Heart pictures up on the wall. You know those ones with the red heart that kind of inflamed? And no matter where you went in the house, the eyes were still on you. You know? And, you know, you would swear. And, you know, my mom would say, "You're going to go to hell. Look, that picture's looking at you." You know? You know, and you got a half an ounce in your pocket and you're wondering, you're thinking about it, like, you know. And I mean, it seems stupid back then. It seems even stupider now, you know. But, you know, there was paranoia and guilt and stuff that kind of came from that, you know, where your mom threatening you with statues and stuff and, like, throwing holy water on you and stuff. And I got, like, a really bad interpretation of religion, you know. I really did. So that's what I came to Alcoholics Anonymous with, a really bad interpretation of religion. I had absolutely no power in my life. I had no idea what God was. I had no idea what God was 5 years into Alcoholics Anonymous. And if you don't start experiencing the power that we're going to talk about tonight, then it starts to show up in your life and it can wear you thin. And it wore me thin to the point at 5 years sober. Still don't have much love in my life at 5 years sober, you know. What I have done is accumulated a whole bunch of stuff. I mean, I've been married and divorced by this stage. I've immigrated back to this country for the second time. You know, I've got a job. I'm making a lot of money. I've got the car, the license, the insurance, the phone. I'm doing everything the right way. And I end up sitting on a bench at 5 years sober, wondering, does God really exist? Empty. The wind blowing through me. Worse than it was blowing through me the day I came to Alcoholics Anonymous. So it says, you know, in the preceding chapters, you've learned something about alcoholism. We hope we've made clear the distinction between the alcoholic and the non-alcoholic. I don't think you're going to go anywhere until you make that distinction for yourself. And if they haven't done it in all those preceding chapters, well, they're going to do it in a couple of lines right now. It says, if, when you honestly want to, you find you cannot quit entirely. So if you've ever found that you honestly wanted to quit and you couldn't entirely, or if when drinking you've little control over the amount you take, then you're probably alcoholic. So those two things. If that be the case, you may be suffering from an illness which only a spiritual experience will conquer. Nothing else. Only a spiritual experience will conquer. Not a whole bunch of meetings, not a whole bunch of working with others, not a whole bunch of faith. A spiritual experience, they're pretty clear there. You know, and that's what Alcoholics Anonymous, again, I talked about it last week, when the newcomer comes in the door, we'll ask them, what are you looking for here? Well, here's what we have on offer. Here's what Alcoholics Anonymous is all about. This book is Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, I love what my friend says. He says, Alcoholics Anonymous is not what you think it is. It's not what your sponsor tells you it is. And it's not what you hear it is at meetings. Alcoholics Anonymous is exactly what it says in the book. That's what Alcoholics Anonymous is. So it's telling me here that I need to have a spiritual experience. So to one who feels he's an atheist or an agnostic, I always wonder, what do atheists do on the holidays? You know? Hope they'll win the lottery or something, right, I guess? I mean, I don't know. I mean, unless you're one of them atheists that enjoys the holidays, I don't know. So to one who feels he's an atheist or an agnostic, such an experience seems impossible. And I get that because, you know, as it goes on to say here, but to continue as he means is disaster, especially if he's an alcoholic of the hopeless variety. To be doomed to an alcoholic death or live on a spiritual basis are not always easy alternatives to face. Why is that so difficult? Spiritual way of life or to die an alcoholic death, why is that so difficult? And I've looked into this from my own experience. Here's why it's so difficult for me. Because see, when I'm sick and untreated and blocked off from God, both those things look exactly the same to me. So they do. spiritual experience, and Dan from the booze looks the same to me, you know? And that's got something to do with a mind that just sees nothing but negativity, you know? I'm delusional about everything in my life. And you know what? If you're new tonight, and all these spiritual terms that we're using, and all the, you know, if you don't get my experience or whatever, get this. The second step's real simple. It's real simple. It doesn't matter if you have 9 days like the lady here, or you have 25 years, or you were drinking wine this morning. You can start to do power with this business in this room right now in the second step. The second step is real simple. All this is asking me to do, this whole chapter, it's asking me to do one thing. It's asking me to change my mind. That's all the second step is. It's asking me to change my mind. Now, it's asking me to change my mind about everything, but I don't have to change it about everything all at once tonight. It's the beginning of a spiritual journey, one thing at a time. And spiritual experience, or spiritual awakening, should I say, because spiritual experience and spiritual awakening are two very different things. An experience is something that we've had, and we're already speaking about it in past tense. Awakening is presence. It's awareness. It's a moment-to-moment thing that unravels. And it's not a pleasant thing. It's not a pleasant thing. The end product of it can be very pleasant, but it's not a pleasant thing. Because spiritual awakening, I'm waking up to the deepest, darkest parts of myself that I've been delusional about, that I've been hiding from my whole life, that have been making me sick, that have been making me pick up alcohol and other things, you know. So it's going to be an uncovering. It's going to be taking these masks off as we go through this process. And as we strip it down, I'm sure we've heard about peeling the layers of the onion. We take this mask off, we take the masks off, and we take the masks off as we walk through here. So, but it isn't so difficult. About half our original fellowship were exactly that type. At first, some of us tried to avoid the issue, hoping against hope. But we're not true alcoholics, but after a while, we had to face the fact that we must find a spiritual basis of life or else. Perhaps it's going to be that way with you, but cheer up. Something like half of us thought we were atheists or agnostics. Our experience shows that you need not be disconcerted. So it says, if a mere code of morals and a better philosophy of life were sufficient to overcome alcoholism, many of us would have recovered long ago, but we found that such codes and philosophies did not save us. So what is it saying there? You know, there's behavior that's hurting my life. This is just self-will. You know, and I don't know how many times I've woke up and I've seen what I'm doing to myself. I've seen what I'm doing to my life. And I say to myself, you know what, I'm going to do better. I'm going to get up earlier in the mornings. I'm going to start to say my prayers again. You know, I'm going to do these different things. But the problem is, I don't have the power to make it stick. You know, I can do it for a while. I can be good for a while. And then, boom, I pull the structure down on myself again. So that's what they're saying here to me. So we could waste to be moral, we could waste to be philosophically comforted. In fact, we could will these things with all our might, but the much-needed power wasn't there. Our human resources, as marshaled by the will, were not sufficient. They failed utterly. Lack of power, that was our dilemma. Again, not lack of meetings, not lack of 12-step work, not lack of power. Now, anybody who's been around Alcoholics Anonymous for a while knows what power is. You know, power to me today is when I waken up in my bed in the morning and I'm looking forward to the day. That's power. I'm not waking up in my bed and I got the pillow over my head and I'm tossing and I'm turning and I'm twisting and the resentment's burning through me and the fear won't let me get out of bed. You know, that's powerless. You know, power is when I'm looking forward to read the emails from the guys that I sponsor. They're sending me their evening reviews or they're sending me messages from wherever they are. That's power to me, you know. Power is that I can go into work today every day and do my job in there. That's power. Those are things that I wasn't ever able to do in my life, not with any kind of consistency. And I often wondered why I wasn't able to do those things. And it's telling me here that lack of power, that's my problem. So I'm not going to do everything here. I'm just going to pick some pieces up. You know, on down the page there, it talks about many times. So it means, of course, we're going to talk about God here in the second step, which used to drive me crazy when my first sponsor would talk about God. It would really make me feel uncomfortable. And I'm going to find out why here it would make me feel really comfortable in the next few paragraphs. It says here, difficulty arises with agnostics. Many times We talk to a new man and watch his hope rise as we discuss his alcoholic problems and explain our fellowship. But his fears falls when we speak of spiritual matters, especially when we mention God. For we've reopened the subject which our man thought he'd neatly evaded or entirely ignored. You know, so we know how he feels. We've shared his honest doubt and prejudice. Some of us have been violently anti-religious. The others, the word God brought up a particular idea of him with which someone had tried to impress on them during childhood. That's where I felt when I came into Alcoholics Anonymous. I felt that I'd been imprisoned by other people's beliefs on religion. You know? And it's funny how it works. I was so afraid of the word God because if I traced my sponsor got me to do this. He got me to trace my experience right back to the beginning in Belfast to the Christian brothers who taught me. Now, some of them were good guys, you know, but they were angry. And they wore these big black cloaks that, you know, resembled the Gestapo, you know, and they had these big white things around their neck and they had these big rosary beads and they did these big special made leather straps and they hit you with them, you know. And, you know, these were the people, these were my guides to God. They were religious study teachers and there were these tough Irish Christian brothers. And, you know, they'd beat you with leather straps to the point where you'd be crying sometimes. And I got an eagle, like a Polaroid, remember those old Polaroid cameras? Where it would take the picture and it would develop right there and then. So I have an ego that's just like that. And, you know, the Christian brother beats me with a strap. I'm crying. That's God. Takes a picture of it, puts it in the filing cabinet for future reference, you know. I had a parish priest who was, he was in the U.S. military. He was captured in Vietnam and tortured by the Viet Cong. He was our parish priest. I don't ever think he left Vietnam. When you'd go into church, if you come in late, and you would stand at the back, he would shout at you, and he would embarrass you in front of everybody, and he'd make you come up the front, and he would let F's and all kinds of language out of his mouth from the altar, and I kind of liked him, you know? So I did. There was a part of me that did like him, and he was crazy. He would come outside the church, the older tough guys and stuff, take his collar off and fight them and stuff, you know? And Father Hansen, God bless him, you know? And, you know, God, 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 the filing cabinets. I don't know about you guys, but by the time I got the Alcoholics Anonymous, my filing cabinets were pretty heavy. And they're heavy with a word that was just used there, prejudice. I've got all these prejudgments about God, and it's nothing to do with God whatsoever. It's nothing to do with God. I'm so far away from it, you know. And, you know, one of the things that it's going to ask me to do here, when I say change my mind, these prejudgments, these prejudices, they're going to ask me to lay them aside here. So that's why I rejected God. That's why I felt uncomfortable about God. And then again on the next page, 46, it says, I love this paragraph because it's personal to me. You know, it says, we look upon this world of warring individuals, warring theological systems, an inexplicable calamity with deep skepticism. We looked askance at many individuals who claimed to be godly. How could a supreme being have anything to do with it all? And who could comprehend a supreme being anyhow? Yet in other moments we find ourselves thinking, when enchanted by a starlit night, who then made all this? There was a feeling of awe and wonder, but it was fleeting and soon lost. You know, warring theological systems. I grew up in the middle of a war in Belfast. I'm just looking at my book there. It says Belfast with an arrow pointing right to that paragraph. So that's personable to me. You know, I grew up not only in a war, but a religious war. People that killed each other in the name of God. And I have a friend who's a priest, and we smoke cigars sometimes, and, you know, and he's a Catholic priest, and he agrees with me. Anybody who kills anybody in the name of anything is just wrong. You know, but these people were fanatics. They were brainwashed by this stuff, you know. So that was just more skepticism for me coming into Alcoholics Anonymous. And on top of that, you know, I think one of the first glimpses of God that I ever got was when I went into Alcoholics Anonymous in Belfast. You know, because it was a community that was split down the middle. And I'm thinking, how can AA work in a place like that? You know, we're both Catholics and Protestants who never got on with anything ever sports, nothing. They never got on. They didn't talk to each other. They lived a few streets away, two entirely separate cultures. And here I was. I walked into Alcoholics Anonymous, and the Catholics were sponsoring the Protestants, and the Protestants were sponsoring the Catholics. I mean, the clergy couldn't sort it out, you know? You know, the politicians couldn't sort it out. The people themselves couldn't sort it out. But here we were in a room full of busted-up old drunks who were using spiritual principles that seemed to have worked it out. It's pretty amazing, you know? It really is. And then it goes on to talk about in that paragraph where, you know, so we're kind of fantasizing, you know, who then made all this, you know, thinking when enchanted by a starlit night, who then made all this? There was a feeling of awe and wonder. And my sponsor again brought me in. You know, I've had some good sponsors that really bring this stuff alive. And my sponsor brought me in. He said, Adrian, was there ever any moments in your life where you just looked out at the world and thought, wow, who made all this, that you can remember? And there was. There was moments where I remember lying on the beach in Donegal. It's a really beautiful part of Ireland. These big golden beaches that stretch for a couple of miles, and the mountains going into the Atlantic and the cliffs. And I remember lying on them sand dunes, like long before alcohol had ever came, and thinking those things and remembering those when I was an adult. And they were really powerful experiences to me. And my sponsor said, do you know why they were really powerful experiences, Adrian? And I asked him why. He says, because in them moments you weren't thinking about yourself. You were thinking outside yourself. You know, and that's why I can remember them moments. You know, so it's gonna give me some first little directions, if you like, in the book here. It says, let us make haste to reassure you. We found that as soon as we were able to lay aside prejudice and express even a willingness to believe in a power greater than ourselves, we commenced to get results, even though it was impossible for any of us to fully define or comprehend that power which is God. You know, at 5 years sober, guys, I've been trying my hardest in AA, I really had. And there's a part in the 12 and 12 where it talks about the alcoholic who tries hard and means well, the heartbreaking riddle. You know, I was trying really hard. I didn't want to feel the way I was feeling anymore. I didn't want to be doing the things that I was doing anymore. Couldn't blame it on the drink anymore. You know, it smashed the idea that my unmanageability and my powerlessness from alcohol had anything to do with each other, because they don't. The second part of the first step has absolutely nothing to do with the first part of the first step. That's why there's a little hyphen in the middle. You know, let's take a look at that. When I was drinking, you know, I didn't know how to be in a relationship. I didn't know how to be faithful in a relationship, should I say. And I always blamed that on the booze. Now, don't get me wrong. Alcoholism magnifies my unmanageability. It really does. But now you're 3 years sober and you're cheating on your wife. What do you put that down to? You know? Now you're 3 years sober, you're not drinking, and you can't make it to work on a Monday morning. The Monday thing started again because you're having emotional hangovers, you know? And I'm trying my hardest in Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm sponsoring people. Now, I don't know what I'm passing on to them, but I'm definitely trying to sponsor them. You know what I mean? I've started a group. I'm doing service till it's full, and I'm not feeling this. And I'm suffering from that thing that alcoholics suffer from, spiritual pride. I'm afraid to tell anybody about it, because it should look that I'm doing good, because I'm doing good things in AA. But see, this whole right action brings right thought. I don't buy it. You know, it didn't work for me. It really didn't. You can do right action, what you think right action is, till the cows come home, and still be in the same situation. And that's exactly what happened to me. And it was getting worse and worse and worse. And I meet people in Alcoholics Anonymous all the time who have 10, 15, 20, 25 years, and they're exactly the same as I was when I was at 5 years. And you ask them, what are you doing about it? Well, my sponsor told me to do 90 and 90 again. Really? So you're gonna try five times as much what doesn't work? You know, you're going to try five times? You know? Well, why are you doing 90 and 90 again? Any particular reason why? You know? And the truth is that I haven't found this power. And I remember sitting on a park bench crying to myself, wondering, this AA doesn't work. This Alcoholics Anonymous doesn't work for a guy like me. It might work for these spiritual cats and stuff in here that are giving these talks and stuff around the place, but it's not working for me. I can't seem to get connected to this power that they're talking about. And I don't even know what that really looks like, to be honest. But I hear them talk about it. And I'd go to AA conferences and stuff and hear these, like, polished up guys give these talks and stuff, and I thought they were full of it. And now that I've that almost 20 years, I can see that most of them are, you know? I'm just joking. So I think one of the best pieces of advice I was ever given was by my first sponsor. He says, if you're doing well, tell us you're doing well. If you're not doing well, tell us you're not doing well so we can help you. And he taught me how to say my prayers, that guy, as well. I always prayed. I mean, I'm doing a lot of the things, but I just can't seem to get there. You know? The inner critic's on me. You know, there's no self-love. And I remember crying and calling this guy up. I'd never even heard this guy speak before, but I just felt like I should call him up. And I remember asking him on the phone, I said, see, when you really get connected to this power and you really find God, do you really know that you found him? And he just laughed. He went, oh, yeah. And I thought it was really arrogant that he laughed, but it was also really comforting. And he says, oh, yeah, you do. And I said, you know, I think I'm in trouble, man. And I think you're the first person I've told that to. He says, all right, well. And he took me, he brought me to 52. So he did. We're, you know, my favorite paragraph, you know, I'm sure most of us are aware of it here. My favorite paragraph ever written on untreated alcoholism, the bedevilments. You know, what the bedevilments are is, you know, that's what my life looks like when I'm trying to run it with no power, with no love in my life. That's what my life looks like when I'm being inauthentic. You know, what it says in that paragraph there, you know, we had to ask ourselves why we shouldn't apply to our human problems the same readiness to change our point of view. We're having problems with our personal relationships. Why? Because I'm trying to control them. When you're, why do you try to control things? Because you're afraid. Right? You know, having trouble making a living. Having trouble, we couldn't control our emotional natures. We were prey to misery and depression. Couldn't make a living. We had a feeling of uselessness. We were full of fear. We were unhappy. We couldn't seem to be of real help to other people. That's how it was every day of my life. That's how it was. I would leave a meeting not being able to breathe, thinking that the building was going to fall on top of me. You know, and he brought me to that, and I just started crying. And he says, you know, what do you actually know about God, Adrian? What do you know about God? And I'm struggling, I'm searching for stuff to kind of tell him about, and there's nothing coming at all. And he said, no, really. He said, you know, leave what you learned from your parents out of it, from your church, from religious studies at school, from old sponsors, what you've heard in Alcoholics Anonymous. Leave it all out of it. What do you know about God? And I was embarrassed. I knew absolutely nothing about God, because what I became in my first lot of years in Alcoholics Anonymous was a parrot. I hear something good that Patrick says at one meeting, and then, you know, I'll save that for next week. You know? When I'm at a different meeting, just hoping Patrick's not there. You know? And see, when you become a parrot, you live the life of a parrot locked up in a cage. You know? And I even got to see why I was a parrot, because I don't have any experience of my own. When you have experience of your own, you ever watch a new guy that's just come through the steps? I'd rather hear him do a big book workshop than somebody with all the information in 20 years, because he's bursting at the sides, man. It's coming out of him. You can hear it. And I'm talking about a guy that hasn't heard no workshops. He's just putting his own experience on the line, and he's maybe sitting beside the guy who's brought him through it, and that's a pleasure. That's a beautiful thing to watch, you know. I remember starting to experience that for the first time in Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, that I actually had something to share. I had my own experience. That's all we have in here in Alcoholics Anonymous, is our own experience. That's it. Nothing else matters. It really doesn't. And, you know, what this guy got me to do kind of blew my mind at 5 years sober and totally changed my being, changed my experience, changed the direction of my life that has never been the same ever since. It really hasn't. And that question that I asked him, you know, when you really know God, you really know, oh, yes, you do. And there's no putting that genie back in the bottle there. You know, I had no idea. I'd hear all these things, you know, for many years in Alcoholics Anonymous, that God's a gentleman, he doesn't come where he's not invited. God ripped my door off the hinges, so he did. Pulled me out of bed, smacked the face off me, so he did, and woke me right up. Woke me right up. And it started with this, I think. It really did. And what he done was, he says, okay, all right, listen, so let's disregard everything that you think you know about God. And he took me to this chapter, and as you see, there's, anytime there's a reference to higher power or God in here, you know, it's capitalized. And he got me to start writing them down. There and then, on the phone, that conversation, he got me to start writing them down. You know, Czar of the Heavens, you know, power, capital P, you know, inner resource, all the terms that it says there. And he got me to write them all down. And I still didn't really know where he was going with this. But he said, all right, well, he said, I want you to look at all these, and not from your mind, Adrian. He says, from deep down within yourself. Because that's where the problem is, it's in your mind, man. He says, deep down within yourself, I want you to start checking off, writing a sentence or two on what each of these means. Like Czar of the Heavens, you know, all the different spiritual terms in here. He says, but I want you to start with Alcoholics Anonymous. He says, do you see the ultimate attributes of God in Alcoholics Anonymous? And I said, I do. He says, well, how do you see God in AA? And I said, well, you know, it's a place where I've came and I've never drank again. It solved my drink problem. And I see other people helping each other and stuff. He goes, beautiful, write it down. And I started to write all this stuff down. And for the first time in my life, I felt that I really started to have this experience with a higher power. This second step had started to come to life for me. And like I said, it really has never been the same again for me. Moving from the first step to the second step, it's unplugging from one reality and plugging into a new reality. And that's what the whole 12 steps is made up with. Unplugging from one reality, plugging into another. When we do it again at 9 into 10, you know, and I get to experience these different realities as I go through this deal here. So it's belief at the beginning of the second step. That's what it's telling me here. You know, we got to believe at the beginning, because you're not going to go anywhere without belief. But belief is not enough. It's got to turn to faith. It's got to turn to experience. I need to have something to pull on when I'm sitting on a park bench at 5 years sober. Because I was warned at the beginning. The day will come when there'll be nothing between you and picking up a drink. There'll be nothing, only God. And I wasn't aware that God was with me that day at 5 years sober, but He was with me. Sitting on that park bench. So this has got to turn the experience. Because belief is just, it's just a concept. You know, belief that I want to go find God. You know, there's no difference in that belief than a belief that I want to go find a Ferrari car. They're just two concepts. They don't mean anything. They can be springboards. They can be a springboard. And the springboard part of the second step is very important. But they're only springboards. So it's got to be backed up with stuff here. So we go on. How long have I got left there? All right. So 55. You know, I could probably say a different page on a different night, but overall, I've probably said this page 55 is probably my favorite page in the whole book. You know? So it's backed me out of this corner in the first step, and it's given me some stuff to think about. In the second step, it's asking me, you know, something else that we skipped over there. There's a question that it poses: either God is everything or He's nothing. What's our choice to be? Mm-hmm. And I've sat with new guys and I've asked them that question. And they're afraid to answer it. They don't know. But it's a trick question. God is either everything or He's nothing. Well, it's both. Because nothing is part of everything. You know? So it's both. The answer to that question is both. And that's a new reality right there. That's a whole new idea for me right there, that God is everything. You know? So if God is everything, my sponsors get some leverage on the phone when I call up for a problem. You know? So it's give me that idea. And then, bang, on 55, Bill comes in and tells me where I'm going to find the power, where I'm going to find God. He says, actually, we were fooling ourselves, for deep down in every man, woman, and child is the fundamental idea of God. It may be obscured by calamity. You know, the calamity in my life, the drama. You know, what's going on at work, what's going on in my relationship. By pomp. You know, my self-importance, right? That's a big one. You know, me wanting to be prestigious and Alcoholics Anonymous or wherever it is, all these different stage characters, pomp. These are the things that block me off by worship of other things. You know, we could make a long list of that. Sex, money, you know, whatever. But in some form or other, it's there. For faith in a power greater than ourselves and miraculous demonstrations of that great power in human lives are facts as old as man himself. So we finally saw that faith in some kind of God was part of our makeup, just as much as the feeling we have for a friend. Sometimes we had to search fearlessly, but he was there. And I thought I'd kind of caught my sponsor up when I got to this part. Sometimes we have to search fearlessly, but he was there. And I said, but does it not say somewhere else that God does not make too hard of terms to those who search for him? So which one is it? And my sponsor explained to me, and this is so true, what I've found. It's not saying that. It says sometimes we had to search fearlessly, but he was there. But we don't have to search fearlessly for God. What I have to search fearlessly through is my garbage, is my rubbish. I got to search fearlessly through the resentments, through the fear, through the dishonesty. And I had a lot of that in my life. I was full up like a garbage pail when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous. And God's at the bottom of that garbage pail. Like I said, it's a stripping away of all the stuff. So I don't have to search fearlessly for God. I have to search fearlessly through my own experience. How far do you want to go here? How much freedom do you want? See, from my own experience, there's radical freedom. Radical freedom on offer in Alcoholics Anonymous through this book. That's been my experience. So it says, in the last analysis, it's only there that he may be found. So it's just told me that God is within us. It's deep down within every man, woman, and child. And when you think how clever that is, only God would be clever enough to hide himself inside you, right? That's genius, right? Yeah. You know, there's me, like, he had me fooled. I'm running around out here looking everywhere, you know? All, you know, drugs, alcohol, sex, all low-level searches for God. You know, I talked last week about being disconnected from the power at about 2 years of age. I remember experiencing that power before that. I pulled the shutter down on God myself. And when we talk about this void in Alcoholics Anonymous, I think every AA story that I've ever heard has had the void in it. That void is my disconnection from God. It's the disconnection from my higher self. And the downward spiral into this abyss that we call alcoholism is just my action the whole way through until it's time. It's like a big game of hide and seek, you know? Now they're asking me to look inside here, you know, deep down within me. And you know what? I heard that before. And I'd read it in books and stuff before, but see, until you experience that, it doesn't mean anything. And when you do experience it, then nothing else matters. And it's as much effect, it says here, as the sun was shining in the sky today. That sounds strange, doesn't it? And it's the most normal thing ever that God is. If I went into my boss tomorrow and said, you know, Robbie, God is within you. Right? Because it sounds stupid, right? But it's the most real, authentic thing ever. You know, I was brought up thinking that God was in the sky. How would that work? So that would mean that God is separate from me, and I would always be separate from the source. So I would have to get close to the source, right? But he's inside me. Where I am, God is every moment. You can't lose God. Even sitting on that park bench at 5 years sober, God's right inside me. He's right in my heart, right in the human heart. So he is. And all the way through my drinking, and all the way through everything, all the way through it, God was with me. He's inside me. You can't get rid of God, you know? But how connected do you want to get to him? Well, how disconnected do you want to get from your mind? That's how connected you'll get to God. How disconnected you want to get from your mind? Because when I was new, when I walked in, there was just one fearful thought after another, like a conveyor belt of fearful thoughts. Boom, 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 boom. And I'm like a dog chasing every one of them. And then when I started to do this and started to get to the bottom of some of my resentments, there started to be pauses in those thoughts, you know, started to be peace and quiet. And my thought system, it's there. It's like a little transistor radio in the background. I'm just like, whatever, you know. But when I was new, I didn't need Netflix. I could just tune in there, you know. I could just set myself in the chair and try some controlled thinking, right? You know, and just watch a good movie, you know, scare myself to death. Have to call my sponsor at 3 o'clock in the morning. You know, they're coming for me. You know, crazy. You know. So, you know, this is the most beautiful promise in the book here. And it's came true in my life today. You know, we can only clear the ground a bit if our testimony helps sweep away prejudice, enables you to think honestly, encourages you to search diligently within yourself. If you wish, you can join us on the broad highway. With this attitude, you cannot feel. With this attitude, you can't feel. You know? You'll waken up. The consciousness of your belief is sure to come to you. So they're not talking about consciousness there. That's more than belief. That's more than a concept. But, you know, we have a program that is full of concepts. And I think, this is only my personal opinion from my own experience, yours might be different. I think the most important concept in Alcoholics Anonymous is the concept of the third step. You know, I have to quit playing God. That's the linchpin of the whole deal right there. So it is. Once I quit playing God, now I can go somewhere. And that started, we're on page 60. The three pertinent ideas. You know, these are three ideas that my life has been built on. A, that we were alcoholic and could not manage our own lives, and the principle behind that's powerlessness. That B, probably no human power could have relieved our alcoholism, humility. And C, that God could and would if he were sought. Being convinced we were at step three. Being convinced of those three things, you know. And then it goes on to say that, you know, the first requirement is we be convinced that any life run on self-will can hardly be a success. And what do I mean by that, any life? Well, if I look at the different, I have different lives within my life. I have the life of the relationship with my daughter. I have my life as a worker in my job. I have my life as a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. And many other things. And if I'm to look into those different lives that I have, it's saying here that hardly any of them can be a success. If I'm in the middle of it trying to run it, these are all the situations that I was having trouble with when I was blocked off. You know? And I remember, you know, my daughter just wouldn't do what I wanted her to do. And I remember calling my sponsor about it, and he says, well, why should she? And I'm like, what? Well, that's not what a sponsor is supposed to say, you know. And he says, well, why should you? He says, do you look at your daughter as a child of God? And I says, well, I think I do. He says, well, how do you think God would want you to treat one of his children? And that was a game changer for me right there. You know, I don't own my daughter. Now, if she's going to do something that's going to damage her or whatever, I'm going to step in and say something. But for the most part, I just let her be today. And since I started to do that, our relationship has become so much better. Same with my relationships with people in work. You know, if I look, you know, we're going to go on and we're going to talk about some stuff here. I want to get there before we go. You know, on 62 it says, so we've talked about a lot of stuff in the book up to this point. You know, it's told us about my alcoholism and everything, what I'm going to do to find power. But now it's going to crack me over the head with what my problem really is. You know, selfishness and self-centeredness, that we think is the root of our troubles. Driven by 100 forms of fear, self-delusion, that's the scariest two words in the big book right there. Self-delusion, I don't see it. I'm not aware that it's going on. Self-seeking, that's the dark side of generosity, right? And self-pity, poor me, the victim. So, you know, the self-seeking one's my biggest game. It's always been my biggest game. I'll do good for you because I know I'm going to want better things from you on down the line. And I make these, you know, I don't do it as much anymore, but what I've done my whole life in relationships and whatever, I'd make these covert deals with you. You don't know anything about them. You know? You don't know anything about them. And that's a real sickness right there. You know? I would do things in my head like, well, my boss is actually my buddy. You know? Me and him are good friends. Now, that may be true, I'd say, work. But when he starts to act up that he's not my friend in work, then that's a problem. You know? Then I get resentment. You know, that's self-seeking, the dark side of generosity. I got an email from my sister a while back, and she was giving it to me. She was ripping me to pieces. Went to the sponsor with that one, read it out to him. I heard myself saying some words at the end of it. How dare she talk to me like that after everything I've done for her? And he goes, what? After everything you've done for her? Why did you do all those things for her? That's the dark side of generosity. See, I do things for people. My first sponsor sprung me on that one, so he did. You know, the first night I met him. He says, you're here, Adrian, because you're selfish and self-centered. And I thought, me? Definitely not. I'm not selfish and self-centered. I'd give you the coat of my back. He says, yeah, you would. You give me the coat of your back, as long as there was something better under the table in it for you. You know? And I don't live my life like that today. I really don't. And that's freedom. And then not only do I make these covert deals, when they explode and go wrong, I become the victim. Poor me. Poor me. I think one of the greatest things that's happened to me in my awakening in Alcoholics Anonymous, that the victim character has been removed completely. I don't go to victim mode anymore. I can't. There's no wiggle room there. I can't go to victim. No matter what the situation is, whether it's something that I've been wronged really badly with or it's a burning resentment, I know that there's no victimhood in it for me. Can't go in there. There's nothing in there for me. Victims don't get sober. They don't. And if they stay abstinent, they're never happy. Because they're always being the victim. How can you be happy if you're the victim all the time? You know? So all this stuff had to go. All these lies that I was telling myself. Because I'm just about to make a decision here. It's the most important decision that I've ever made in my life. And again, I'm going to unplug from one reality into another reality. That, guess what? Your life doesn't work for you, Adrian, the way you run it. Your life's unmanageable when you try to run it. So it's telling me here that... it's giving me some promises here. This is the how and the why of it. This is the bottom of 62. First of all, we had to quit playing God. Why? Because it doesn't work. Next, we decided that hereafter in this drama of life, God was going to be our director. He's the principal, we're his agents. He is the father and we're his children. Most good ideas are simple. And this concept was the keystone of the new and triumphant arch through which we passed to freedom. So this is going to be the center point of my new life right here. That I'm going to have a new employer. That I'm going to walk into this new life. And then it goes on to talk. You know, we just passed it there on 61, where it talks about the actor and the director. So he just doesn't want to be the act. He just doesn't want to be the director. He wants to be the actor. He wants to have both jobs, right? And if you read through that there, it says, you know, most people try to live by self-propulsion. Every person is like an actor who wants to run the whole show, is forever trying to arrange the lights, the ballet, the scenery, and the rest of the players in his own way. That's the bedevilments in action right there. You know, I've never read that to an alcoholic that didn't identify with it. But I normally don't think so. I'm an extreme example of self-will run riot. Extreme. But I normally don't think so. That's the delusion right there. And what delusion simply means to me today is lost in the mind. And that's a place where I don't care to go anymore, to get lost in my mind. You know? It's not a good place to be lost. So it's not. And it gives me the four examples of... the victims, you know, the retired businessman who lulls in the Florida sunshine in the winter, complaining of the sad state of the nation, the minister who sighs over the sins of the 20th century, politicians and reformers who are sure all would be utopia, the rest of the world would only behave, the outlawed safecracker who thinks society's wronged him, and the alcoholic who's running through Alcoholics Anonymous, ripping the place up, trying to get his own way. That's another one of the victims right there, right? You know, that's a question I need to ask myself. How are people experiencing me today in my job? I ask my boss and my colleagues and stuff sometimes, how you're experiencing me. My daughter, people in my home group. When I walk into my home group, are the people smiling? Are they happy to see me? Or are they rolling their eyes going, oh boy, here we go again? Because I'm sure that's how they used to experience me. In fact, I know that's how they used to experience me. Because see, when you don't need to be right anymore... then you just don't need to behave that way anymore. You know? And I don't know when that left me, but it did. So it's setting me up here to take this prayer, which we call the third step prayer. I think I'll say it, and I'm going to end it up soon, and I want to hear from you guys, you know? So it says, we were now at step three. Many of us said to our Maker, as we understood him, God, I offer myself to thee to build with me and to do with me as thy wilt. Relieve me of the bondage of self, that I may better do thy will. Take away my difficulties, that victory over them would may bear witness to those I would help with thy power, thy love, and thy way of life. May I do thy will always. We thought well before taking this step, making sure we were ready, that we could at last abandon ourselves utterly to him. That's strong words there. And I don't know about you guys, but I don't think you can ever take the third step fully. I don't think there's ever been a 24-hour period where I haven't experienced some kind of self-centeredness. I don't think it's possible to take the third step fully. But what I'm going to start to do is now, I'm going to start to walk into the world of God's will. So I am. And I'm, you know, I used to think I'd say the third step prayer every morning and I was turning my life over every morning. And in reality, there's actually nothing to turn over. There's nothing to turn over. So there's not. What this really is following through with the inventories and the rest of the work here. And it's about aligning my wills with God's will. And what's God's will? Well, you know what? I don't really know. But I do know this. In my own journey and my own experience, God's will has been something like stretching my consciousness and pushing me to my full potential. That's what God's will is right there. Stretching my consciousness and pushing me to my full potential. And however that looks, I'm cool with that today. And I don't think there's any accolades on the spiritual path. I don't really think there is. But if I think if there's one thing I could put in achievement mode, and it's nothing I've achieved, it's a place I just landed, and I think it's the best place I can live from, is the not needing to know what's coming next. Is the not needing to know what's coming next. So I'm setting this up, and I'm leaving it at that for maybe, I don't know, maybe I'll bring some inventory and share it with you. Maybe I'll bring some sex inventory next week and share it with you. You know? Yeah, right, I wish. So I don't know. Oh, easy you. Thanks for having me, guys.